This is HPR episode 2434 entitled, Cirrhosis. It is hosted by HPR Audiobook Club, and is about 99 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, the HPR Audiobook Club discusses cirrhosis by PC. Herring.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hey everybody, this is Taj. I just wanted to jump in here real quick before the episode started and kind of give everybody a heads up of what's going on. You may have noticed that there has been a pretty big hiatus for the Audiobook Club and that we just came back last month with our first episode. We have lots of episodes that are already recorded that we've just been very negligent in getting out. So while we will mention that the next episode, and we are going to release each episode 1 month apart to give everybody the opportunity to go find the book and listen to it so you can at least know what's going on in the episodes. We will not have a live discussion because that has already happened. So unfortunately, that's just kind of the nature of what has happened. As we get closer to new episodes, we will let you guys know, and then you can jump in and be part of the conversation. But with that, here we go.
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Hacker Public Radio. Today we've got another audiobook club. And I'm Pokey. I'm one of the panelists here today, and the other panelists with us are Taj.
What's good, everybody?
And X1101.
Howdy, folks.
This month we'll be reviewing Cirrhosis by PC Herring, and I have to apologize up front for dropping the ball because I don't even think I sent out the announcement on this one. So we may be the only three people who know that we were doing this one. And I greatly apologize. This whole month has slipped my mind. X1101 even sent me a text to say, hey, you're recording tonight, because I'm late. So I completely forgot about it. So
you're just earning your name again.
Yes, absolutely.
And let's be honest, you're not 5150 late, so you got that going for you.
All right, not bad. Yeah, so here at the Audiobook Club, the Hacker Public Radio Audiobook Club, we all listen to an audiobook. It's going to be ones that we picked are all going to be freely available so that it's inclusive to anybody. There should be no cost to the audiobook. And then we meet together on a mobile server on the second Tuesday of every month. And we review the audiobook. The first part of the show, we don't do any spoilers. So if you haven't listened, feel free, and or haven't listened to the audiobook, feel free and listen to at least that much of the podcast. We take a break in which we review a beverage of our own choosing each week. Sometimes folks pick alcoholic beverages, some folks pick non-alcohol beverages, and some folks, maybe do a mixer or something. I don't know. And then after the beverage review, we continue with our review of the audiobook, but then we include spoilers. So at that point, you may wish to stop listening until you've listened to the audiobook, if you choose to listen to the audiobook. And if you don't choose to listen to the audiobook, go ahead and have it spoiled for you, I guess. I don't know. What do you guys think? How'd I do?
That's a pretty good summary.
Sounds about right.
Cool. I should script it or something so we can get through it without forgetting anything. This is our 13th episode. I think I'd have that figured out by now.
Nah, I like the spontaneity.
Cool. So, X1101, this was your pick for an audiobook. So, let's hear what you thought of it.
Oh, this book's so nice, I listened to it twice, but well, that's a good start. I listened to it initially, took me about a week digging through it, and you know, I thought it was a good action-packed story in a genre I at least kind of enjoy. A decent decent or better writing. I thought the voice acting was really good.
And I'll add in here, the genre was sci-fi. This is definitely a sci-fi action, almost thriller maybe.
And it's a kind of a subgenre of that called cyberpunk. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I haven't figured out 100% what cyberpunk is. I, you know, thought maybe cyberpunk was more punk than this. I don't know.
Yeah, one of my favorite cyberpunk books is Snow Crash by, and now the author's name completely slips my mind. So if one of you guys knows, tell me. Otherwise, I'm going to look it up.
Neil Stephenson.
Thank you, Neil Stephenson.
Yeah, I have to listen to read Snow Crash. I've never read that one. Heard it's really good, though.
It's really good. Though, and Taj may appreciate this explanation of it, but I feel like the endings to his books are always follow the same vein as some of the things you find in a math textbook. The remainder of this proof is left for the reader as an exercise. Or in his case, the remainder of this story is left for the reader as an exercise.
I think the only book I've ever read by him was, now the name of it has slipped my mind, but I felt the whole book was a textbook.
Was it Cryptonomicon?
No.
You should give that a read as well.
Quicksilver. I read Quicksilver, and it felt like reading a history book with a little story thrown in to keep you a little more engaged. But it wasn't cyberpunk, and it wasn't the book we're reviewing this week either.
Womp, womp, womp.
Yeah, so Taj, what did you think of this one? You said you were dying to hear what everybody else thought. Why is that?
My kind of feelings about the book were, it's okay. I don't know. It's a genre I typically really like. And I just kind of felt mediocre on it. Like, it reminded me of just like a guilty pleasure, like that one like sci-fi TV show that you know isn't good. Like, you know that it's not going to win any awards or anything, but you'd still watch it because you kind of enjoy it anyways. It was enjoyable. Like, I don't regret reading it, but it just didn't hit me all the way. Like, it was a good read, but just kind of mediocre to me.
Yeah, and I'm on the other end of the spectrum. I did not like this one. As I mentioned towards the end of the last show, and I probably shouldn't have, this one just didn't do it for me. And I usually do like sci-fi, so it wasn't the genre thing. Cyberpunk, if this is cyberpunk, then yes, I do like cyberpunk as well. There's a couple others that I could think of that I really like, but this one just didn't do it for me.
Well, then, sorry to have picked a book that wasn't a grand slam here.
Well, no, that's kind of the whole point, is to have a discussion, so they can't all be like grand slams, and you can't always pick a book that everyone's already listened to and agreed that it's great, so let's do it. No, I mean, this is, you know, it's what it is. It's not the first book that we've had that, you know, every panelist didn't like, and sometimes when every panelist loves the book, it gets a little boring. So, no, don't worry about that at all.
I think there's definitely enough in it that there will be some debate as we go on with this book.
All right, well, let's let the debate begin. And this is a pre-spoiler. And the first thing I didn't like about it, because it was the thing that just could not be escaped, I didn't like the voice of the voice actress. It just, to me, the entire way through the book, there was some affectation of her voice, and I don't know what would cause it, but it just kept reminding me of someone chewing gum. It felt like she was maybe popping her jaw at the end of her sentences or something like that, but it was nothing not a noise you could hear. It was just an affectation of her voice, and it was like cheese graters in my ears, and I wish I knew why, what it was or what was affecting me about it, but I couldn't take it.
And it's funny, I didn't hear that at all.
I'd say in general, like the sound production of it was probably one of the best produced things we've listened to, or at least since I've been on the shows. It was really well done. It was really well mixed. Like, it was, all the levels were the same. The only thing that drove me crazy is the like whooshy sound that in between, basically where you would have your like ellipses in the page or your little line that would break apart like inside the chapter. Every time that happened, I wanted to punch somebody in the face. That sound was so annoying. It drove me crazy.
Yeah, and it was really good audio quality, which sometimes can enhance something you don't like about an audio production. So, you know, I again, this is just me, not like it. I'm not saying it's a bad book. I'm not saying that the reader was bad in any way or any of the acting was bad in any way. It's just was just something I didn't like. And I can't really put my finger on exactly what or why, you know?
I think one of the cool things about the way it was done is also one of the detriments to it, or it could be, is the fact that obviously the author went out to the community, which is awesome, and said, hey, guys, can you do these voice parts for me? Which is awesome, because most of these people have experience doing, you know, some sort of, you know, recording, whether it be a podcast or whether they actually do voice acting. But so like one of the characters is voiced by our own alum, Christiana Ellis, who was on an episode. And every time I heard her voice, like, she's playing a completely different character than Space Casey. But yeah. I kept just imagining Space Casey every time she came on.
Yeah, I had a hard time picturing her, like her voice in an Asian woman. You know what I mean?
I guess I'm at a disadvantage because Space Casey, that was the first episode of the book club that I had heard, but I hadn't listened to the story. So I stopped at the beverage review. And so.
Yeah.
I think they all do a good job. I don't think anybody is terrible at acting. Actually, I think a lot of doing it sort of the way that it was done, almost like an audio drama, having the different characters have different voices, which is a little different than just your straight audiobook, really helped, because a lot of the people were really good actors, which made a big difference. But when you did have the one person, not in particular calling anybody out, but just saying, when you get to that one person that maybe isn't as good an actor of everybody else, it really sticks out.
Yeah, I have to say, and if Lost in Bronx were here, he would be able to define them better than I can. And he has before, and they just don't stick in my brain. But, you know, of the different types of audiobooks, the one with a full crew of actors for each individual part and then a separate part for the narrator, I think is my favorite of all of those. It's better, I think, than a full-on audio drama where there is no narration, and it's better than a single reader trying to do all the voices. Usually, some readers are really good at that, but typically I do like having the separate voices, and it's never bothered me, even in audiobooks where people say, like, oh, it sounded like they were in different rooms, or they were on different equipment, or they just weren't interacting. It's never bothered me. I've always kind of preferred the different voices.
And I think that's not even a problem with this book. Whoever sat down and did the mix on this book is somebody who knows what they're doing. Like, it sounds very professional. There's very few times where there was some thing that was poking out where I'm like, oh, that this was different. You know, obviously I know going in that these people were not all in the same studio, but I think that probably the best that could be done in that situation was done. So I think the audio production was really good.
Yeah, I think we're in full agreement on that.
And it sounds like you guys just know a lot more about audio engineering than I do, because, you know, I go into this and I just hear a book. I don't hear any of this stuff.
Well, you're also listening at double speed, aren't you?
Close to.
Yeah, a lot of that is hard to pick up on when you're at double speed, just because all the tones and the pitches are going to be changed anyway. And a lot of your background noises kind of get softened out, like air and stuff like that. You don't always notice. Though the sound effects can become grating at double speed or at higher speeds. But yeah, a lot of times it kind of it'd be like looking at a picture through a frosted lens, you know?
Well, the other thing is I've always been guilty of having an overly active imagination. And so whether I'm reading or listening, I can do a good enough job just being in the story that sometimes the medium being less than 100% perfect doesn't usually affect me as much as it does other people.
Yeah, and I have a broken imagination. I keep trying to fix it, but I'm terrible at visualizing settings, no matter how well they're described. And I think I've said that before on the show, but I do enjoy people's voices, and especially, you know, vastly different voices and different accents and stuff. I've always enjoyed that kind of thing. So maybe I listen a little too closely to those.
Well, if you have a problem envisioning settings, you should read some Ayn Rand. She goes on ad nauseum about the settings, and I'm sure that you would get a picture in your mind in painstaking detail.
No, I get sleepy. That's the trouble. I fall asleep to stuff like that.
I thought everybody fell asleep to Ayn Rand.
But I actually read two of her books. One of them I did have to fight to stay awake through, but it was because it's a mountain of a book.
I'll argue that Anthem is a good book. I hate the idea of Anthem, but it's a good book.
Yeah, I read that in my honors English class in high school and loved it. And then I proceeded to read Fountainhead, which was a good story, but it was just so long.
Also still not the audiobook we're talking about.
What is it with you guys and wanting to stay on topic tonight?
Oh, it's because I was so late. We got to try to finish up at a decent hour for you working people.
By the way, I'm just going to get it out of the way. Star Trek, Marvel Comics, Batman, Cthulhu, and what am I missing? Star Wars. We'll just say we covered everything. We're good.
Don't forget Firefly.
Shit, Firefly.
I think that pretty much covers all the bases.
Well, no, because he mentioned earlier that it was a guilty pleasure, so I'll have to say Farscape as well.
And I think we throw a D&D reference in, and then I think we may have hit all the bases.
Yeah, I forgot D&D. I have not I watched one episode of Farscape, and it wasn't my thing, but I think it's one of those things that I just didn't give enough of a shot. I should go back and try it.
I might not have even mentioned the right one. I think Farscape was the one that was actually decent. It was the other one that was the guilty pleasure, the weird one. What was the weird one?
Farscape is Muppet in Space, so I don't know if that's the one you're thinking of or not.
Poke, it's sci-fi. You're going to have to be more specific than the weird one.
There was like a dead dude and a woman, and I think the spaceship was alive, and they were like disembodied android heads on screens or something like that.
Lex. Is that Lex?
Yeah, that's the one. I used to love that. I didn't see many of them, but I loved the ones that I saw. It was weird.
It's on Netflix, and I've had people recommending it to me like crazy, so I may have to... That's now bubbling further up in my queue.
Isn't that like... I'm just completely making this up. Isn't that like a Swedish show or something? Like it's totally from somewhere else?
Well, if Sweden were in Australia, then yeah, that would make sense perfectly, because it's upside down and... weird and fishy.
Done. Sold. I'll watch some more. Anyways, back to the book.
Yeah, I liked that the story moved along pretty well. It didn't linger too bad. You know, sometimes a story can just kind of drag on and on. I thought the pacing was really good, and it moved quickly enough to keep me listening, even though it wasn't for me, it was not one that I turned off. It wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, I kept going because, all right, I would like to see how this turns out. So I was engaged.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of time spent on just exposition. It was things happening.
Though I did think the flashbacks could have been done better. I thought they were maybe... artificially mysterious, if you know what I mean, like the author like held back on them more than was really necessary to try and draw out some kind of tension there, and that I didn't care for.
Well, I felt like the tension was tension she was really feeling.
Yeah, and she would have been, too. I mean, because of all the, you know, the body mods she went through and somewhat, I don't know, memory loss and just, yeah, she was definitely under tension the whole time, and the whole time she was in the middle of this mystery, but I don't know. I don't think that the flashbacks helped me to experience that.
I think so much the thing that it helped me experience was her state of mind.
You mean batshit crazy?
Yes. So we've got batshit crazy robot girl.
Sounds like half the animes I've ever watched.
Yeah, it just, that alone was enough to take me out of the story at a lot of points where, like, you know, batshit crazy super cyborg isn't disabled in any way or, you know, monitored any closer, or it just, here, run with this kind of thing. I mean, I know it's necessary for the plot of the story, but I don't know, just so much in this story made me think, boy, that's really not how things would happen in a real world or a real bureaucracy, or even if I were in charge of the thing, you know?
There's several points that I would like to make to that I think would be better made after into the spoiler section, because too many details.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, it's a detail heavy one. This, some of them we've gone on for, you know, well over half the show without spoiling anything. And this one, I think, it's not much to say about it without spoiling it. Except that I also didn't like that the one guy's name was Tech Guy, because no one could remember his name. Like, seriously?
And how, speaking as a tech guy, why would you be okay with that?
Well, no, for a long time at work, I just told people my name was Phone Guy because I know they'd never remember my name, you know, if they saw me in 6 or 8 months, and I, you know, didn't mind being a phone guy. I liked my job. But yeah, this is not a thing like where I was working at, where I'd work and, you know, you might not see me for 6 or 8 months and you're over there doing your thing. But this is like an office setting. Everybody's in the same building. And yeah, really, nobody knows his name. It was like, wow, that's really disrespectful to any tech guy alive, you know?
I guess I didn't know that you were a phone guy. Analog or VoIP or both or smoke signals?
Little of everything. Yeah, I even had a set of tin cans, literally had a set of tin cans and a string. But yeah, everything from that up to I never did VoIP at work, though I have worked on it.
Asterisk is a beautiful, terrible nightmare of a wonderful piece of technology.
Yeah, I know. I tried getting into it a little bit and just ran up against the hardware limitations and that kind of thing. It's hard to work with without the right hardware.
No, it's hard to work with even with the right hardware.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But anyway, yeah, I didn't like that the guy's name was Tech Guy. That bothered me.
Yeah, that did feel artificially, and now I'm not coming up with a good word, artificially kind of distancing him from them even more.
It seemed like it was one in a long line of like quasi cliches, the guy that is named after what he does. I mean, it's kind of like your big muscular dude on your team being named Tank.
Yes, but Tank is a decent enough nickname. Tech Guy is awkward, and he's also like her confidant. You know, you'd think she'd know the man's name after, you know, him knowing her deepest secrets and, I mean, literally her most intimate of anatomies.
So we've got this. Now that you mention it, it does kind of hit a lot of the stereotypes really well.
No, like when I said, like, it sounds like half the animes I've ever seen in my life, it's kind of true. I kind of feel like this. Whoever wrote the book, I forget his name. I kind of feel like
PC Herring.
I'm kind of like, man, you are a big anime fan because there's a lot of things. And I'm not even like a huge anime dude. I've seen some and I like the good stuff. I don't like the bad stuff. But a lot of it is just like, oh, that's where that came from. And oh, there's where that came from.
She was the MD police officer.
Or the chick from Ghost in the Shell.
Hadn't seen that one. I should, though, I'm told I should.
So we've got very good voice acting, fairly good sound quality, and hitting way too many stereotypes. Anyone have anything else in the non-spoiler section?
Let's spoil it.
Yeah, I'm racking my brain. I can't think of anything. Might as well go ahead with your beverage.
A couple of weeks ago, my lovely wife and I took a little weekend getaway up to Bar Harbor, and we were in one of the little coffee shop there, spending way too...
It's pronounced Bar Harbor.
Yeah, I may live in Maine, but I still speak Midwest English, where we pronounce all the letters the way they're written.
Yeah,
damn right.
Well, up in Bar Harbor, you pronounce all of them except for the R's.
Oh, no, you pronounce the R's, just not where they're written.
That would be Bra Harbor, and that's not right either.
I guess I was thinking about the way people here pronounce the name of our state capital. The name of the capital is Augusta, and it turns out to Augusta or something ridiculous.
Yes, it can.
Anyway, we're in the coffee shop, spending way too much money on coffee, and I look in the cooler section, the little cooler there, not looking to get anything out of the cooler, because I'm in a coffee shop, I want coffee. But I saw Mountain Dew Livewire, and this is the only time I have seen it in the state of Maine. This was introduced like the last two summers I lived at my parents' house before college, and I fell in love with it. And then it was only during the summers, and then I couldn't get it. So the last several years, my mother has bought a 12-pack of it and brought it up to me. And I found some, and I had to buy it and save it and share it with you guys. Virtually.
What is it?
It is Mountain Dew's take on orange soda, for lack of a better description.
Oh, okay.
The description on the bottle says, Livewire, Dew, sparkle with artificial, natural and artificial orange flavor.
Okay, and there really shouldn't be lack of a better description, because that's why you're here.
So, still carbonated. That's good, because I haven't opened it. It's got a nice, pleasant orange soda nose to it. And it's everything I remember it being. It's got most of the citrusy sweet of the Mountain Dew, but it's not any of the sharp liminess. It's a nice mellow orange. It really does taste like if you took half of a Mountain Dew and half of an orange soda and combined them. And then there's just a little couple drops of magic that makes it better than that.
Wow, I haven't had a Mountain Dew in probably a decade. Is it like ridiculously sweet?
Well, for one who doesn't drink soda more than a couple of times a month, yeah, it is. I used to, you know, live on Mountain Dew, but what, you know, high school and college age nerd didn't at the time.
This guy right here.
Okay, well, not all of us can be, you know, water drinking all the time forever.
I didn't bring water this time, okay?
Wow. But, I mean, it's... If you drink soda all the time, you're not going to notice it. But for someone who spends his whole life drinking, you know, now water or, like, bitter beverages, coffees, teas, dark beers, this is really syrupy. But it's like drinking a bottle of nostalgia. So that's my review.
Well, I, for one, did bring water this week because that's all I'm drinking today. I've got a bottle of water. Our town has a wonderful water plant, does a good job, makes good tasting water come right out of the tap. And we put a filter on our tap so that it's even better. And it's, we got it like a big old charcoal filter under the sink, and I drilled a hole in my sink to put the tap off of that. And that's what we got. And it's good, warm or cold. It has a nice watery flavor with no other metallic tastes or anything, kind of minerally. We have like mineral tasting water up here in the Northeast because of all the granite, but I happen to like mineral waters, so that's pretty good. Searching desperately here for the name of my water filter that I can only half-heartedly recommend, because it's kind of a pain in the ass. It's got two great big carbon charcoal filters, which are great, but the way that it's plumbed in is pretty bad. It uses like the water comes into the valve, which is up at the faucet, and then it goes back down to the filters, and then it comes back up to the faucet. So it's not under any pressure, and it makes it come out really slow, and it doesn't always turn off exactly right, and it's kind of a pain in the ass of a filter, and it was expensive, and you got to change the filters every 6 months, which is about $50 for a pair. So I have a hard time wholeheartedly recommending it, though it does make good water come out of the tap. So I don't know, maybe 3 stars, I think, is what I gave it on Amazon. A lot of discussion around my Amazon review of it, if I could ever find it. But yeah, that's my beverage review for this week.
All right, well, I guess that leaves me. Today was kind of our first late autumn, kind of Midwest, dark, rainy, windy days. So decided to come home and kind of same thing X1101 did, kind of went with the comfort. So I got my big old latte mug and I filled it up with some Swiss Miss hot chocolate mix, and that's what I'm rocking tonight.
Cool. I think I like Swiss Miss. I think of the hot chocolates, that's the one that I have. That's the one that I like the most.
It's the one that comes in a big can at Costco, so that's what I have.
Does it come in dark chocolate?
Does it come in chocolate? It is chocolate.
Dark chocolate.
Not that we have. I think this is just the milk chocolate kind. I'll be honest, it's not the best, but it'll do. It's very comforting.
Okay, sorry to interrupt you there, but I just found it, the water filter that I found. I gave it 2 stars on Amazon. It's the Aquasana AQ4500 Complete Undercounter Water Filter System. So if you know what you're getting into, if I knew what I was getting into, I wouldn't have rated it so low. But they weren't real honest or completely forthcoming about, you know, how the thing that the water runs and drips for a while and how it came out slow and all that kind of stuff. So, and it doesn't come out cold either, because there's so much plumbing involved. It never comes out cold. You gotta put it in the fridge after you're done with it. So that was it. Aquasana AQ4500.
And Pokey, you had said something about wanting to talk about your bulletproof coffee while we were in the beverage review area.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, I would say it's more your bulletproof coffee, because you're the one who's actually making it the way they recommend making it, with like a tablespoon of butter and a tablespoon of coconut oil. But I was the one that brought it up. And I was going to say, as a semi-beverage review, I was going to recommend a brand of coconut oil that is somewhat low cost compared to the other ones, and also tastes good, because I haven't found, there's a lot of them that don't taste good at all. There's one in particular that's really disgusting, and it's not even inexpensive. It's actually expensive. But I did find a good cheap one that is readily available. Seems to be all the different grocery stores around here, and it tastes good. And it's the Spectrum brand coconut oil, and they're all virgin coconut oils, but the unrefined one is the one that you would want to put in your coffee, and that one's actually really good.
I think that's actually what I have in my cabinet. I think I just picked it up at the local store.
And I'm checking Google image search now to see if it's the one I just bought.
Yeah, I've tried a couple different brands. There's one in particular, Better Body Food and Nutrition. That one was disgusting. It tasted like they put it, tasted like they shipped it and used 55-gallon motor oil drums. It was just, it had a lot of coconut flavor to it, but it had a lot of heavy, oily flavor to it too, and it was really bad. And me and my daughter both, it gave us like a stomach ache to eat it or to drink it, and we couldn't do it anymore. We had to stop and I had to buy something else. And there's another brand that comes in a little square tub that's pretty good too, but I think it's a little more expensive, maybe on par with the Spectrum, but it does taste good, but not quite as good. The Spectrum really has a nice like savoriness to it. It enhances coffee rather than damaging it.
I actually found, I do have a jar of the Spectrum. I bought that as my second jar because I have one that I'm about a third or a half the way done with, and it was considerably cheaper where I found it than what I had paid for my last jar of it, of coconut oil. So once I finish my first one, that's what I'll be using. But I use about a teaspoon of each, not a tablespoon. Coconut oil and butter. And then I run it through a blender and it produces this nice creamy, actually looking at it after the blender runs, it looks just like a just poured glass of Guinness with all of that action still going on in it.
Oh, that's really neat. Yeah, if I had a blender, I'd probably try it that way. But like I said, just stirring up butter in your coffee, obviously doesn't dissolve because it's oil based, but it doesn't even go into a very good suspension for more than a few seconds. But the coconut oil, I'll stir that in and put some cream in there, and it sort of does tend to float to the top, but my coffee mug is watertight, so I can just shake it up a little before taking a sip, and it tastes good that way. And yeah, I like that the coconut oil in the coffee does make me feel a little bit more alert and does give me a little bit more energy in the morning. I'm not reaching for a snack quite so early and I've been cutting out sugar anyway, so I'm not really craving the sugary snacks and the starchy snacks as much.
And see, I feel like it makes me sharper mentally.
Yeah, a little bit. And that's what it's advertised as. The goal is to be a little bit more mentally sharp with the coconut oil and the butter in there.
It's almost like getting the boost from the coffee, but not ever getting the caffeine crash afterwards.
Todd, you were about to say something there. I think we walked on you, though.
I was just going to say, you guys keep talking it up, and maybe eventually I'll get my predisposition to not liking it out and try it.
Well, I mean, if you've never tried it, then yeah, go ahead and try it. But if you tried it and don't like it, don't let it try to change your mind. That's not going to work. At X1101, I was just about to say that I did hear, it might have been Joe Rogan. I think I heard from him. He said that the coconut oil kind of elongates the caffeine high. It takes the peaks off of it and mellows it out and makes it longer so that you don't crash and that it kind of boosts you. But I'm not so sure that that's what's going on. I think it has more to do with the medium chain triglycerides that it's loaded with that your body uses as fuel. I think that's more to do with it, but I have heard it explained that way.
Well, I mean, I don't know what it's doing chemically. I just know how I feel. I don't feel like I get a caffeine crash. I don't feel like I'm dragging by 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't even usually, you know, the last week because of the time change in EST going on, notwithstanding, I've been staying up later, feeling sharper, and, you know, not dragging in the next morning before I get my coffee into me.
Yeah, one thing I noticed since drinking coffee with coconut oil in it is that I usually only drink one big cup of coffee a day, probably 16 ounces or 14 ounces or something like that. But I noticed when that thing's gone, I wish I had more, and I didn't used to care. Once it was gone, it's like, all right, great, coffee time's done. But now I could take a mug of coffee with me all day, and I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, I can remember the look you gave me when I was raving about coffee at Northeast Linux Fest, but man, that coffee was like a spiritual experience.
Oh yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love good coffee. I usually can't drink it past a certain point in the day, or I get jittery, and I don't want to be up all night either.
Between my body chemistry, my brain chemistry, and overexposure for the last decade, I have to drink a lot of coffee before I have that problem.
Yeah, I got to drink a lot of coffee before it wakes me up, but I don't have to drink a lot for it to keep me up. You know what I mean? Like at night, if I have coffee after like 5 p.m., I'll toss and turn all night. It won't, you know, keep me out of bed and jumping around. It just won't allow me to sleep.
So I think that, and here I'm going to commit to it on air, I'm going to do a follow-up to my how I make coffee, discussing how I make my bulletproof coffee.
Oh, bitchin'. Did you hear the HPR that just was on how to make coffee? You got to mention.
Dave Morris, yeah, I did. I listened to that. I ended up working from home last week, so I didn't listen to so many podcasts. I took the opportunity to listen to some music at a high volume instead. So I was catching up on podcasts this morning, and that was in the queue, and listened to that. I chuckled a little bit.
Yeah, that's funny. I listened to it this morning too. Was it today's episode? Because I'm a little behind.
I think it was yesterday's. Today's was actually a 5150 episode.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm still behind. But yeah, that was a good one. Now, what was up with this coffee maker? Was it like a vacuum coffee maker or something?
No, I think that was it was his coffee bean storage that was a vacuum, which I've read some negative things about what he was doing, pumping the air back out. When I did some digging on it, and the research I found said that actually was worse for the beans to continue to depressurize them because it pulls the oils right out of them.
I would imagine that the vacuum to atmospheric pressure transition, that doing it cyclically like that would not be good, because you're pumping all the air out, and as soon as you open it, you're getting a fresh batch of new oxygen. I think you'd be better off just keeping the air that's in there as undisturbed as possible, but what do I know?
Well, I know I keep my beans in the freezer, which I've read some things about, but I've had good results in it. I take it out of the freezer enough to scoop my couple scoops out into my coffee grinder, and then right back into the freezer it goes. So the beans that are in the freezer don't come up to room temperature and go back down and come up and go back down very much.
Yeah, that'd be bad. That's death to a muzzle loader. I can imagine what it would do to coffee.
I do know that the last couple pots out of the end of a bag are never particularly impressive, though.
Yep, same with a can of coffee. All right, so who wants to spoil this thing?
I think I do. Taj, you ready to spoil the crap out of this? Well, as always, silence is consent. On the mailing lists and here, I guess.
I think Taj might be having some audio trouble. He's dropped out a couple times.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Or not audio, but network trouble, rather, because he's just completely disconnected from the server. This is the second time.
And before you got here, he was having some problems hearing me. I assumed it was on my end, but it might not have been.
Hey, Taj, back?
Yeah, I got dropped. I don't know what happened.
We're ready to move into spoilers. You all right with that?
Let's do it.
All right, so where do you want to start?
I think I want to circle back to the point you were making about, you know, not how it would work under a bureaucracy. The biggest point I wanted to make there was the bureaucracy she was part of seemed to operate well enough off the reservation that they could probably get away with doing it that way.
Yeah, it was independent, or mostly independent. It was kind of like a secret overwatch of all the other departments as well. But yeah, you're right.
A secret agency.
Yeah, but once again, going back to cliches, we had the cliche of the rough and tumble secret agent that gets to break every rule and everybody's okay with it because they're effective. I was just like, as soon as that first lecture between her and Briggs, I guess her boss, and he's like, "Ah, you went off the reservation or whatever," and then he's like, "Ah, oh, but you get things done, so we're gonna let it go." I was just really okay.
And wasn't he the stereotypical secret agency boss? You know, the cigar and the bourbon and the fancy leather chair and the, you know, field experience and the fatherly and the pretending to be getting mad. And then you're like, "Oh, whatever, we need to get shit done." And
yeah, I just imagine him with like a big old bushy mustache, just like totally almost like a cartoon character.
This is one of the reasons I love doing the book club, is because you guys always point out things that I just don't see. But now that I'm thinking back on it this way, this book was a bunch of stereotypes strung together with a really good story wrapped around it.
Yeah, I don't always see the stereotypical stuff either, or maybe I'm just forgiving of it sometimes. I mean, not all the time. Sometimes stereotypes bother me and cliches bother me, but you know, it doesn't always. The one that got me in this was the villain, the bad guy, who was, you know, the stereotypical super hacker who could, you know, just hack in and do whatever he wanted in no time whatsoever. And, you know, just at will, it seemed, he could access computer systems, just, you know, very hand wavy and that kind of thing. It was, you know, and what he was able to do via code, you know, imposing his will on the real world and, you know, in a way that nobody else even came close, even though he wasn't the guy that invented it. They invented it, but it felt very contradictory to me.
I don't know. Most of the tech was stuff that he at least did the initial specs on.
That's another thing that the science doesn't check out. If you're the guy that's designing this stuff, nobody ever who is funding you, it's going to let you be, "Oh yeah, I'm totally going to be the one that tries this."
Well, I don't know, man. Nobody seems to believe in hit by a bus except for like Linux people.
And, you know, not even Linux people in general. I mean, IT people wish that people believed in don't get hit by a bus, but, you know, I've worked in a lot of IT departments where there's no depth to anything, which means no vacations or...
Yeah, and the secret agency, I didn't even think of that as being cliched until you just brought it up, but it makes me think of a book that I read recently, which is really old. It's considered one of the first modern sci-fis, is a book called Triplanetary by E.E. Smith, I think is the guy's name, Doc Smith, he goes by. And even in that book, They've got this secret agency that just allows their agents to break the law all the time if it's for a good cause. And it was like, it was really old. And it was like, to me, that was, you know, golden age of, you know, USA and freedom and all this kind of stuff. Because it was like from the 30s and 40s. And I found it kind of sad that mindset was okay back then. And it kind of embedded it in sci-fi at that point, I think, where you have that, you know, secret agency who can get away with things because the public would freak out if they knew, that kind of thing.
No joke. That was totally the audiobook I was going to recommend for next time.
I didn't know it was an audiobook. I read it.
I read it years ago because I read the whole Lensman series. So obviously that's the beginning of it. But yeah, I haven't heard the audiobook. There's actually two different versions, but I saw it the other day. I was just breezing through because I actually like the Lensman books, as campy and old as they are. And I was like, oh, we should totally do that first one because I'm kind of like, it's kind of a train wreck to read because it's so back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And I don't know which version of it you read. There's two versions of it. And I was kind of like, I just kind of wanted as a weird experiment, just recommend it for the audiobook club and see how it turns out.
I think that's what we'll do then. If you can find it, then we'll definitely do it. I read the good version, by the way.
Which one's the good version?
Well, the one Pokey read.
Yeah.
I missed that one. Which one was it?
I'm not sure. I got it. I think it was free on Amazon. I read it on the Kindle.
Circling back to your point about, you know, the government agencies that just kind of get away with doing whatever they want, I don't know how much, you know, network television or anything either of you guys consume. We consume a lot of it via Netflix. And one of the things I've noticed on all of the, you know, crime drama du jour, whichever one you happen to be watching, where the cops are the good guys, as is fairly obvious most of the time, you seem to be rooting for them to not wait for a warrant, to just go and do the things, or, you know, oh, that those terrible criminals, they're demanding a lawyer and how dare they? And it's just, you know, these people who, you know, expect you to respect their rights under the Constitution are all of a sudden terrible because of it.
Well, I mean, I have a lot of friends that are in law enforcement, so I can relate to that in a certain degree. But at the same time, I'm always the first person to like be in their face and be like, no, that's not the way it works. I'm sorry. I respect what you do, but no, we're not going down there. And it reminds me of, there's some show, I don't watch like TV that's actually on. Like, I'm kind of like you, I'm a Netflix guy, other than like a couple shows that, geeky things that are on. But there's some show where there's a computer and it like predicts crime or something like that. It's kind of like Minority Report Lite or something. And the creator, when all the NSA stuff dropped, the creator came out and he's, you know what, we made this show thinking there's no way any of this is actually possible, that the government would have this much information. Turns out we were pretty right. This is terrifying.
I guess the point I was making was, it almost seems like it's attempting to make a cultural shift to make people accept that is accepted behavior among law enforcement, is to not pay attention to these documented civil rights. Maybe I'm reaching there, but it feels like some subliminal messaging there.
Well, it always feels like sci-fi authors, when they do that, or when they represent law enforcement that way, it's almost like they're saying, hey, this is right around the corner, and whether you need to be warned of it or just aware of it, be aware that it's right around the corner. But really, you know, as Cory Doctorow might say, it's here now, and that's why it's being written about, because it needs to be thought about now.
I would argue it's not brainwashing. I think it's just inherently undramatic to stop in the middle of everything and go deal with due process. That is not an inherently dramatic thing. So it's easier to just skip over it and say, okay, we're just going to hand wave this for the sake of plot.
But they don't hand wave it in, oh, well, we have a warrant. It's, oh, we're not going to worry about getting a warrant. I would be completely okay if they hand waved stuff, but hand waved it so that the things that needed to happen had just happened. But it's, well, we know there's these things we should do, but we're not going to do them, and it's just going to somehow be okay anyway.
Okay, so I said I'd made all the references at the beginning, but I'm going to make one now. Does anybody watch Gotham?
No, I'm sorry. I don't watch any TV anymore.
I'll wait till it's on Netflix and then I'll really enjoy the crap out of it.
So it's basically just like a cop show in Gotham City before Batman's Batman. But there's literally, in this episode, one of the cops goes, "Hey, do you have that bunch of blank warrants signed by that judge so I can go ahead and fill some out?" That sounds about right.
I've been watching Arrow, which is based on Green Arrow. And he's Batman with a bow and arrow and no problem killing people.
You want to watch my wife go on a freaking tirade mentioning that show? She's like, for some reason that I don't understand, and will never understand, she's probably the world's biggest Green Arrow fan. And she hates that show. She can't stand it. She's like, he's not the Green Arrow.
I would assume that, you know, if you like something, don't watch the TV show because they're not going to do it right. For someone who's not a Green Arrow fan, I think it's a very entertaining show.
You're right. It's Batman light.
I don't know. Batman has this problem with killing people. He doesn't.
No, but recently he does. So now he's just Batman again.
Oh, yeah. I just started season two where he does all of a sudden have the problem with killing people. I'm like, so he's Batman with a fancy bow and arrow.
Anyways, back to the book.
So we've got this government agency that has the potential to be off the rails, and an agent who is definitely, at least mostly off the rails, in no small part because she had a horrific accident, lost her husband and then got turned into a semi-human, and then there's, you know, the almost required discussion of, well, am I a person or am I property?
So basically RoboCop?
Yes. Yeah.
Except
yeah, it was a lot of RoboCop without the reasoning. Like, she made some crazy decisions that were completely illogical, and I thought that was the cliched thing that bothered me about it, was, oh, let's trust the bad guy because we're confused about what the good guys said.
It's RoboCop, but without the... One of the things that I thought was a big point in RoboCop was even the government's for sale, and to the highest bidder.
One of the things that I thought about was when Cybrosis, or whatever his actual name is, I forgot because I wasn't actually interested. whenever he was like telling her the story about why he went berserk, and like it was something in his implants that went crazy. Obviously, he's still crazy, right? So that problem hasn't been fixed, or it has, or he isn't interested in fixing it.
Right.
So maybe a lot of her is that same problem, just not fixed. Maybe it's fixed a little bit, so she's not as crazy, but we've already established she's in the realm of batshit crazy. So how much of that is her and how much of that is the tech?
I think a bit of it was her, because he even told her, look, this stuff made me go crazy. And she was like, damn it, that makes you trustworthy in my book. I can relate to that.
Well, I also think part of it was the biological portion of her brain, you know, going through a huge loss. And, you know, for most of the book, she kind of had wished she had died, and not having that same reality check, plus being a superhuman, plus being able to get away with it, would mostly lead you to being off the rails.
Yeah, but most people, when they go off the rails, are somewhat aware of it, and they take that opportunity to get grounded. You know what I mean? They kind of find out where things went nuts, and, you know, let's get back to square one kind of thing. Where she was like, oh yeah, everything's batshit crazy. I'm just going to go and break all the laws because now I'm a lawbreaker, you know?
Or even more ridiculous is when she finally does show up at the like mansion, and then he tells the story. She just instantly 180s, like everything's, oh, I'm just going to give all this up. I'm just going to be happy and live here. I'm kind of like, I would buy that if you did some work on it, but just having her instantly switch is just strange. I don't know where that came from.
Well, yeah. there was the plot bullets that worked with that.
That was not a plot bullet. That was lazy writing. I'm sorry to say it.
Yeah, because the book's not that long. You could have totally put another chapter in and done some work with that, and it would have been, granted, it still would have been a whiplash, but it would have been a little more subtle whiplash than it was. Because I was just like, Chin, just knock her over the back of the head and drag her out of there. Like, this is dumb.
Well, so what you're saying is with another chapter's worth of work, it could have been moved up to a plot bullet.
I guess if you want to call it that, yeah, let's do that. I had another pet peeve about the action scenes in the book. I think in general, the action scenes were okay. They were fairly well written. This is just maybe specific to me because of my background as being a martial artist since like the time I could walk. There is one move that in every fight scene, somebody nails this one move, and it's a very specific move. So I feel like either the guy knows some martial arts or has seen this move in something and he really likes it, and it just keeps happening. And it's good guys get it, bad guys get it. Somebody gets this move in almost every fight scene, and it drove me crazy. Towards the end of the book, I was literally waiting for, when is somebody going to throw this move?
And which move is that?
It's where you basically, it's called in Japanese, it's called a tomonagi, which is, it's a sacrifice throw. It's kind of like from judo, jujitsu. And like, you put your foot in somebody's chest/stomach area and you fall back and you throw them over top of you. And like, it's a super cool move, but it's really impractical, like in a real fight. Or at least I feel so, because you're literally falling down on your back to throw somebody else. Now, if you can get up and get on top of them after that, that's great. But there are much better ways to handle that situation than that.
That would be good in judo, where all you have to do is throw them out of the ring and you win. But yeah, you're right. If you got to get back up again, that's trouble.
Yeah, and it just seemed like I kept happening. I was just, it was almost, I don't know, it just a paint-by-numbers fight scene. Like, okay, I got to have the flashy move because that's what it would be in a movie. If this was a movie, what would I want to see in the fight scene? And it's just, I don't know, maybe it's just because of the way my brain works. I'm just like, no, you wouldn't do that, especially if you're like superpowered. Why would you do that? Like, the whole point of that move is to use somebody else's force against them. If you can make as much force as you want, why would you do that? Just walk up and punch them in the face.
But in almost all the fight scenes, she was fighting other people who were superpowered, and her superpowers were malfunctioning. So she wasn't just this invincible badass anymore. She, you know, couldn't just win all the time.
Oh, he's got you there, Taj. What are you going to say?
You're wrong.
Ooh, low blow.
I mean, I understand. I'm totally cool with that move existing. If you pulled it off, like, it has a point. Like, it wouldn't have been preserved in kind of the history of martial arts if it wasn't a move that could be used. Like, there's a place for it. I just have a problem with that place being in almost every fight scene that happens.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with you. I was just pointing out that she couldn't just make as much force as she wanted. So it could have possibly been useful for her to use her opponent's force against them once. Maybe not in every fight she was in, but
I beg to differ. That last fight where she's like at her worst, she summons all the strength she has for one last fight.
And then does that.
So you said you kept waiting for it. Did he have a particular name for it? Because I didn't notice that. Did he call it a particular thing, or did he just describe it the same way again and again? Or how was that?
I don't even think it was described the same way, but maybe because I'm very much, when I'm listening or reading something, like, I visualize it. Like, I kind of think of, you know, if I was a director, how would I shoot this movie?
Sure,
you
know? Sure.
So, like, fight scenes to me, that being me, that's kind of what I like. And so, like, I'm thinking, and every time he describes it, when people describe fight scenes, I instantly start thinking, like, how would that be blocked? How would that fight go down in a movie? Because movie fighting is totally ridiculous, but it's fun to watch. And so, like, every time it happened, I'm like, damn it, he just did another tomonagi. That's that same move. It just kept happening. I don't know. And really, I'm probably making it a bigger day. It probably happened like three times in the whole book, but it seemed like it was enough that I noticed it and I kept waiting for it later in the book. The last couple fight scenes, it doesn't happen. And I was actually like, I'm kind of surprised it wasn't there.
Yeah, but there are only really three kind of knockdown, drag out fights, too.
Fair point.
Oh, no, there was more than three. There was the huge one at the beginning. There were three like huge, huge fights. You're right. There was the one in the beginning where she destroyed half the city. And there was the one in the middle where
her apartment.
Oh, right. Her apartment. Is that the one, her apartment?
Yeah, her apartment where he comes and attacks her and they end up going out the window again. And
yeah, okay. Like, yep, you're right. And then the one that was at the headquarters and ranged all over back to everywhere.
I guess that's what I meant by the three big knockdown, drag out, cyborg versus at least partial cyborg big fights.
Yeah, you're right. I was wrong on that one. But there were a bunch of other fights. Now, did she do it in the like the sparring fights and stuff too, Taj, that you noticed, or?
He went AFK for a second.
Oh, I missed that. Sorry. Typing on a different screen here.
Man, how many computers do you have in front of you?
No. I just mean I changed the tab. I was doing the show notes in the Etherpad.
Ah.
Yeah, I got to backpedal here and agree even stronger with the point that Taj made about how she kind of just flip-flopped her opinions throughout it on just a word, you know what I mean? You know, let's be rich here forever. Okay, I'm ready for that kind of thing. I found it unbelievable when it happened, and it took me out of the story. And I get that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but it was explained later as being part of the virus, right? Where she was like overly susceptible because of the virus that she had. But it's still not being explained at the time knocked me out of the believability of the plot.
Well, see, I felt like it was supposed to be outside the realm of normal because it was. And that's why Chen is there to kind of anchor that. Someone other than the narrator and the main character saying, just going along with it, someone saying, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. And then explaining, oh, wait, she was, they said that she was like doped with some extra chemicals or something that was messing with her brain. It wasn't the virus, I don't think, but it was something he was giving her that made her more susceptible to believe him or something.
Yeah, and, you know, like it all works out in the end, just didn't work for me 2/3 of the way through the book. You know, that and the as we discussed, the cliched, you know, destroy half the city, but we're super secret, we can remain super secret, so we'll just write that one off. You know, that doesn't work for me either.
Yeah, they do have there are quite a few kind of hand-wavy, well, because we need it to, sort of moments.
So how predictable did everybody kind of feel the book was?
Well, not 100%, or else those things that were so out of place wouldn't have felt quite so awkward. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the risk you run when you were, you know, when you do something that's a little stereotypical or cliched, you run the risk of being predictable. And then, of course, on the other side of it, when you're not, you know, when you completely avoid any kind of stereotype or cliche, you run the risk of being unbelievable. So it's a fine line that an author has to walk. And I can't fault the guy for not hitting it for me specifically. You know what I mean? Because either way, somebody's going to be unhappy. So as long as he's happy with it, that's what counts.
And overall, it was still an entertaining story.
Yeah, totally. Like, I don't regret reading it. I think it was fun. I don't know if I'd read it again, but I mean, it was one of those things that I enjoyed doing it. I just felt like, for me, as soon as, and it doesn't happen probably less than halfway in the book, the first time they mention, and they mentioned it in passing, somebody says, she's the second cyborg. I'm like, that's the bad guy. I called it. There it is. That's the end of the book. And so, like,
for sure.
It was totally, that's totally what's going to happen.
I was going to ask, was there anything else that you thought was real predictable, or was that it?
I mean, the whole thing did feel a little formulaic, but entertaining nonetheless.
I mean, we've talked about my love of comic books, and comic books are basically really super formulaic soap operas with superheroes. So, I mean, I'm not against formulaic and stereotypical. I can enjoy that for what it is. And I did. I enjoyed it. It's, you know, it, when we're sitting here nitpicking it, it's kind of easy to start pulling at the loose threads on it. There's a lot of, there are some places I feel that it was a little lazily done. But, I mean, some of my favorite books are, you know, just kind of that pulpy dime novel kind of deals that are, you know, they were written literally to get paid by the word. So, I mean, people would write some crazy stuff, but if you embrace the crazy, it's a good thing.
Why use one word when you can use three?
Or hell, just make up a couple.
It's interesting that you say that we're, you know, nitpicking it and pulling away at the threads. And I think we get into this discussion every time we do the audiobook club, but you're right. And sometimes, like, there have been times where you said, this book is so good, all we can think to talk about is the nitpicky little stuff. But with this one, I don't know, maybe it's there's so many books that are so outstanding. We're maybe expecting, you know, this audio book perfection every time. And when something's not perfect, you know, just perfect, maybe I get too nitpicky with it. I won't speak for anyone else on this, but, you know, I did say right from the beginning, this is me that didn't like this book. It's not that this book was bad and I pointed it out. You know what I mean?
No, I mean, I feel like if you had a running total of the amount of nitpicks we have, it's probably pretty consistent, regardless of how well we liked the book or how well we didn't like the book. We're critical. And I think for me, the reason I like the audiobook club and the reason I like being on the audiobook club is when I'm listening to something now for that, I listen to it in a different way. I'm thinking about it kind of meta, thinking, well, what am I going to say on the show? You know, when we do the show on this, how am I going to analyze this, or what am I going to say? And I think that makes me enjoy things a lot more. Things that I wouldn't necessarily have liked, I kind of like more because of the discussion we had about it. And some things, you know, like this, I totally enjoyed this. I thought it was fun. But at the same time, us sitting here, and I don't want to say nitpicking it, but we're, you know, just pointing out some things about it, I don't think it cheapens what it is. I think it's just we all kind of looked at this, well, for me, we looked at it in a different way because we knew we were going to come to the show and talk about it.
And I would say, in general, people who are disposed to be either on the audiobook club or listening to it are detail-oriented people. I mean, at least for me, that's my day job, is I'm detail-oriented. And, you know, when you bring that kind of a mindset to bear on anything, you're gonna find something.
Yeah, and I find that things that bother me about books are a hell of a lot stickier than the things that I like. And that kind of stresses me out when I'm listening to an audiobook, because I really try to remember the things that I liked so much and wanted to compliment. But if I don't take notes on them, they don't stick. But the things that I didn't like about it do. Those are the things that I remember. And I feel bad for that. And I'm going to try to work on that.
I agree. It's way easier. I mean, that's just in general in life. You remember the bad things, you don't remember the good things as well. So maybe that should be like our, you know, Hacker Public Radio audiobook club New Year's resolution. Besides make a Hacker Public Radio episode every year, maybe we should make notes of the good things we want to talk about.
I am completely on board with that resolution.
So what did you guys think about the scenes, because there was like a couple of them in the like the mainframe room where he was the bad guy was trying to hack into the whole system by getting it, you know, access to these mainframes. What did you guys think about that whole scene in particular?
Well, I started laughing to myself as soon as I said mainframe, so.
What is this, 1976?
Well, they still use mainframes where I work, but they're the old antiquated thing that feeds in data to these new useful things.
Well, aside from the word mainframe, because come on, people are going to use it, and you know, when it's a centralized server, they're going to think of it that way. And there's no, I don't really have a problem with that. I just, the action in that scene, maybe it was too nonstop, and maybe it just was too unbelievable. But it was like every time it cut away to, you know, another scene, and then cut back, it was less believable than previous. And I was just totally listening to that portion of it just to get through it. I was completely out of the story for that whole sequence.
I think every time they actually touched a computer, my suspension of disbelief had to go up a bit. Because specifically, I'm thinking about when she sees the virus and she's looking through it, and she sees this whole like page, and she's scrolling through pages and stuff. And I'm like, first of all, even if that was English, you couldn't read it that fast. But it's code. So, I mean, there are people who could probably read code as fast as they can read English. But like, what are you, data? Like, you can just fly through pages now? And my understanding was is that your brain is saying, like, that's what you had before. Like, it hasn't changed to make you super smart all of a sudden. I don't know.
It's funny. I was able to suspend my disbelief in that part. I just figured she could read code. Why not?
See, I didn't think that at all. Almost all of her approach to technology was very not what I expected. She very much was a user of the technology. She did not, you know, understand or really embrace it, other than it makes me faster, it makes me stronger.
Yeah, but the code was really well commented. That's what she was reading through. This part makes her crazy. This part makes me super believable. But come on.
This makes her crazy. This makes her sick. This makes the... her arms not work. This makes her arms feel heavy. This makes me super believable.
Yeah, and how did he bug check that? The poor person that he tested this code out on first. Wow.
I can tell you by reading this book, this is her code. This is her programming. If rules, then break. Else, punch.
Done. Go to 10.
One of the things that I did notice is every time she like interfaced with the computer, it did the virtual where it used her subconscious to build things. I thought that was a cool change of like the snow crash thing, or I forget what they call it in Neuromancer, like the whole virtual representation of computer stuff. I like the idea of building it out of her own subconscious. I thought that was a cool idea.
Well, in I've not read Neuromancer. It's on my list. But in The Matrix, they always called it The Construct, and it was kind of similar to that, where, but it was more machine-driven than mind-driven. This was your brain inherently making sense out of what was there, rather than the computer presenting something for you to interface with.
That reminds me, I was going to ask, does anybody know when this was written? What date?
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Because I think, I mean, this is, I don't know. I feel like if this was written in 2005, it's a little more acceptable than it is if it was written in like 2010. I don't know. That 5 years difference makes it huge. And like, they're all carrying around PDAs. I'm just like, really? PDAs? They got their Palm Pilot?
Well, why not, dude? Those things are so much better than cell phones. It's not a Palm Pilot. It's like an N810.
Yeah, but those are two very different things.
But you're telling me 10 years from now, if somebody comes out with a PDA and calls it a PDA, people are going to want it.
No, but I think it may be 50 years from now when we all just have implants. Yeah, we're probably going to want something high-powered that we can carry in our pocket and easily upgrade.
That'll be a cell phone.
Screw you.
And they're carrying around PDAs when they have like those ballin' holographic displays that like come up on their forearms. I'm like, why do you need a PDA? That's way more awesome than anything you're rocking in your pocket.
Well, you got to have the PDA in so that you can copy his entire database to it in just a few minutes.
Have you seen the prices on SSDs?
I'm more concerned with the data transfer rate.
They've got USB 12. It works.
I want to step back for a minute and how you're saying that the whole construct thing was so neat. I think that that just put, for me, a finer point on something that bothered me all throughout the book, is that she was not able to directly interface with her implants, and she was not able to use her implants to directly interface with other computers. It was like, wouldn't that be the first thing that you plug into this shit? Let her interface with it, and the bad guy could do it. He had an implant in his arm that let him interface with any computer system, and he was directly interfaced with his implants. That bothered me.
You missed the part where they said that her implants were made by Apple and the bad cyborg is Steve Jobs.
Oh, right. Gotcha. Sorry. Yeah, all her implants were in WMA.
It's the eye arm.
She has a DRM liver.
That was in our last book, man. The guy with the implants from iLife. Or two ago. That was Lost in Bronx's book.
Okay, I was going to say, how did we get to iLife from Call of Cthulhu?
Just go with it.
Well, that's how everything looked so inside out and backwards and acute when it was obtuse. It was incompatibilities with the iLife drivers.
Non-Euclidean implants.
I don't know. I've been told I'm acute, even though I'm fairly obtuse. Really, not even Rotten Tomatoes or anything? That was a really bad joke, and I know it.
I was trying to concentrate on saying nice things.
I didn't want to fall into the realm of fat jokes, so I was just going to leave it be.
I live in the realm of bad jokes, so...
Enough to chase people out of the chat room.
That's what we do.
That's par.
So, yeah, I think that's about all I have on this one. But because I'm trying to be nice, I won't get into the motorcycle chase.
Oh, please do.
That was just too cliched too early on for me. I think that might have been what did it. That might have been what set me off or lit the fuse of not liking this one, was that just totally egregious, action-packed, unrealistic motorcycle chase, and I'm sorry.
Snow Crash has a much, I thought it was a much better motorcycle chase in it. What did you think of that one, Tosh?
Yes, but the thing of going into Snow Crash is you have to realize that Snow Crash is half a cyberpunk novel and half a satire of cyberpunk novels. I mean, your main character's name is literally Hero Protagonist. So, I mean, when you're going into a book like that, you have to just kind of check your expectations at the door.
I was going to say, even The Matrix had a better motorcycle scene.
It had a motorcycle scene? I do not remember that.
It's the second one. We all try to forget it.
Was it the second one with the motorcycle scene, the motorcycle chase where she's dodging cars and stuff?
I think it was.
I don't know. I've tried to forget all three of them. After watching all three, I've even tried forgetting the first one.
I don't think I've ever, I will still argue that the first movie and the second movie are brilliant. And the second one, less so than the first. But when you had that third one in, and like literally your main characters disappear for 30 minutes, like they're not in the movie for 30 minutes, there's some serious problems. I kind of wish they would I think that that movie should be remade. I think they should remake the first Matrix, and I think let somebody else do it, and it could be 10 times better.
I heard the third one described as the writers were grasping at straws, trying to pull the threads of the story back together, and they missed all of them.
But we can get a lead actor who has more than one facial expression.
Yeah, I won't get into that. But you know what, though? If anyone hasn't seen the animated Matrix movie, that's worth watching. That was really good.
You mean the DVD that's got all the various anime shorts that all go together?
Yeah. I think that
actually... For me, if you want the second movie to make any sense, you kind of have to have seen the animated movies, because there are some things that make no sense without it.
And there was a game that was in there, too, that unless you had seen the Animatrix, you're like, what? Who? Why?
Oh, that's right. And the game was supposed to be an essential part of the storytelling as well, which I think is a mistake. But anyway...
The game was only kind of crap.
Oh, I just mean it's a mistake to make a game essential to your story, because not everybody who's going to watch the movie is a gamer, so they're going to miss that part of the story.
Yeah, you'll alienate a non-trivial portion of your audience.
Yeah, everyone who saw the third movie.
Well, no, I figure if you stick through it long enough to see the third movie, you may also be a gamer, but...
Yeah, anyway, I don't know. Poor Todd, he keeps getting taken out.
It's all that flatland.
Yeah, that'll do it. The wind just picks up and blows his internet over.
I can't really say much. I'm a flatlander by nature. By birth, anyway.
Happens to 5150's Wi-Fi, too. Just wind picks up, knocks it right over.
Does he have some kind of a WISP?
He used to. I don't know what his setup is now. He's got pretty fast internet now. And he may still be on that. It's, yeah, point-to-point Wi-Fi.
My folks are on something like that. It works well places where it's mostly flat.
Yeah, I think 5150's trouble was always because he didn't have the receiving antenna for that system in his house. He had it in a small outbuilding, and then he was connected to the house through Wi-Fi, and then probably had a Wi-Fi repeater with routing built into it and stuff. And it was just too many links in a wireless chain. I always thought he could fix it just by running a wire to the house, but I guess it was far.
Sounds like a little bit of a Rube Goldberg to me.
Yeah, which is the most fun, but doesn't always work the best. At one point, I was ready to take some vacation and run out there and install the wire for him.
What is this vacation time?
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm the new guy. I get 10 days of vacation time.
Oh, that's rough. No, I had some pretty good vacation at my last job.
So my advice, when you find a new job, negotiate more than starting vacation.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's I mean, the big one right now is going to be money. I can't, you know, go back to making like nothing. You know, I was making real good money at my last job. But yeah, that's first. And I'll take that over vacation at this point, just because the bills all build up. But you're right that starting vacation is no good.
Well, and my first job out of college, the way they did it was you accrued one more day every year. Whereas it seems like the industry standard is you don't get more time until you've been there 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. And so that just feels like forever to not have vacation time.
Oh, I forget what the accrual was at my last job, but it was great because they said you've got, you know, I think it started at 15 days. You've got 15 days, you know, use a few of them as sick days, use a few of them as vacation days, and we won't really care. You know, as long as there's coverage and nobody complains, nobody really ever complained, and it was great. And I think at the end, I was up to probably 4, maybe 5 weeks.
Well, that's the one saving grace, is I have 2 weeks of vacation time and an additional 2 weeks of sick time. And the sick time can roll over infinitely. So that's nice.
Well, that's pretty good. Yeah, we were only allowed to roll over, I think, 40 hours a year. And they didn't buy any of it back. If there was more than, if you had more than 40, they wouldn't buy your time. That was obnoxious. It's usually, sorry.
It surprises me that they can get away with stuff like that.
It's usually lack of funds that causes you not to take vacation time.
We're in a whole kerfuffle of that stuff at work at this point. They've changed the way they do vacation, so it's going to your time's going to expire, so you had to use it up by the end of the year. But then we've got project deadlines, so we can't miss those. So take vacation time, but don't take any vacation time and get all your work done.
Yeah, we had something like that towards the end, too. Boy, so if the listener can't tell, we're really stalling here because Todd dropped off and, I mean, like 6 minutes ago, and we're stalling trying to wait and get him back on. But I'm not sure if he's coming back at this point.
Yeah, it has been a spell.
The listener won't notice because all the dead air is you know, just deleted out of it and edited out. So it might not seem that long, but I mean, it's now over 7 minutes. X1101, type something into the Etherpad because I think he runs it out of his house, so that'll tell us if his internet is up or not.
Okay, line one.
Oh, hey, that's third color. Well, he's there enough to correct my punctuation. Oh, wow. He says it. He's in Mumble, and it looks to him like we dropped off.
Ta-da.
Yeah.
Yep.
I can has a mumble.
we just mumbled on for the last 5 or 6 minutes, just killing space till you came back.
Oh, I'm glad you guys think so highly of me.
Thank God for Etherpad. Nice work, Todd. You saved the day, and you weren't even here to do it.
And of all the days for my cape to be in dry cleaning.
I've got a cloak. Will that help?
Only for LARPing.
No, I just wear it because it gets cold out and, well, I'm a nerd.
So I'm assuming all those times that I hit the speak button, it was like, hey, you guys there? Are you dead? What happened? I guess none of that got recorded.
Nope.
No, at 9:20, it says you disconnected.
Wow, I've been gone a while.
That's what we were saying. We were really stalling.
We were talking about vacation time.
Everybody who listens to the episode is going to love that.
We may even just delete it. It wasn't even all that interesting.
That would require editing. We don't do that.
I haven't done any editing. I'm way behind, by the way. You would think with all this unlimited free time and no distracting budget that I'd be able to get some shows posted, but no, I'm way behind. I'm wicked sorry, guys.
It's all good. So did we finish the episode, or are we still going?
I think we were waiting for you so we could wrap it up, unless X1101, you've got anything to add to it.
No, not really.
Okay, so then I guess Taj has picked our next audio book. You want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah. Well, we kind of both picked it, I guess. You brought it up, and I, like, as soon as you brought it up, I was like, damn it, that's what I had in mind.
Random number theory.
Well, or, you know, we're just both awesome, and we thought of the same thing, which I tend to think.
Or it's just a glitch in the Matrix.
The infinite monkey theory.
Okay, yeah, probably that last one. So,
but you know what they say, an infinite number of monkeys pounding on keyboards, still can't exit Vim.
Oh, Vim jokes.
And I'm a Vim user.
I'm a glutton for punishment. I use Emacs.
I was going to say, they got org mode down, though.
Yeah, but how do you have enough hands to push escape, control, meta, alt, and shift all at the same time?
Infinite monkeys. X111. Infinite monkeys.
I has infinite monkeys. So anyways, the book. feel like that's my catchphrase this week.
Wait, there's a book?
Anyway,
wait, there's a topic?
So we're talking about doing Triplanetary, which is the first book in a series of books, although it wasn't written to be the first book in a series of books. It was retroactively added to the series.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was going to mention that it wasn't the first. It was he found a good story in there and a good way to retroactively tie it in.
Which, if you're reading the story, is blatantly obvious, which is one of the reasons I want to hear it as an audiobook, because I'm interested to see how it transfers. I love the Linson series, the whole series. It's obviously very dated, but it is so... It's one of those things that if you read articles about the people who make science fiction that during the 80s and 90s, kind of that range, it's one of the things that they all mentioned. It was kind of an influence, and you can really tell once you get into the series that a lot of people read this and really loved it.
Sorry, I was just going to say that I had no experience with Lensman. I had no idea what it was. And when I first heard about it, it was on a podcast where somebody was just talking about it and how awesome it was. And it took me a good deal of time just to figure out what he was even talking about, because there's no book called The Lensman. There's The First Lensman, I think, is one of them. But this, there's no way to tell that this book has anything to do with the Lensman series just by reading the description of it or whatever. I actually had to go to Wikipedia to find out that it was the first one that I should read, because he did retroactively add more than just this story. There was a weird timeline that went on that was adjusted later.
Yeah, and for anybody who's listening who doesn't like understand what the Lensman is, if you're at all familiar with DC Comics and the Green Lanterns, the Lensmen are pretty much the Green Lanterns. pretty much the Green Lanterns were obviously copied from the idea of the Lensman, but it's that, but set in kind of that pulpy 1950s sci-fi kind of feel. So I mean, it's really retro. I love it. I think it's good. Triplanetary is not very representative of, I can't say that word today, doesn't represent the whole series very well, but I think because it is the one that is in the public domain, I don't think the other ones have made it to public domain yet, or maybe some of them haven't, not all of them. It's just, I was just searching around LibriVox the other day looking for things, and it just jumped out at me that it would be something cool to listen to.
This is an awesome pick, and I'm having a hard time not saying more about it now.
Yeah, we'll have to talk off the mic, because you've read it, so I'm interested in that at least.
Well, no, everything I have to say would be pre-spoiler, but that's still next episode. So good night, everyone. Thanks for listening. Join us next time.
It's a cliffhanger.
Dun, dun, dun.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club, and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.